込み終えた。それ。
Thank you. So I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to give this talk. And I would like to describe the work I've done on crossing equation for the ADS5 cross S5 S matrix. And the outline of the talk is as follows. First, I will give a brief introduction to the problem. Then I would like to describe S matrices in relativistic integrable field theories. I mean, in conventional relativistic integrable field theories, how they are obtained typically. And what kind of problems one encounters if one would like to adopt the same methods for the ADS5 cross S5 Rothschild superstring. Then I will give a brief introduction to crossing and Hopf algebras, which is the language which I would like to advocate for implementing crossing for the ADS5 cross S5 case. Then I will describe the implementation of the crossing condition, the necessary generalization of rapidities, and the introduction of some elliptic curves which appear to be quite natural in this framework. And also I would like to spend some time to say why solving the resulting equations appears to be very difficult. So, so the main problem, of course, is to find anomalous dimensions of all operators in n equal to plus super young Mills, or according to ADS-CFT, to quantize the superstring and find energies of all string excitations. So one would like to solve both problems and show that they are, in fact, equivalent. Now, depending on, there are lots of similarities like integrability structure on both sides, but in a way the most natural framework of addressing these problems is a bit different, like spin chains for on this side and Rothschild quantum field theory or sigma models on this side. And what I would just like to here to mention is that depending on, I mean, from which side of this duality one starts, certain notions are very natural from in one language and are quite difficult to imagine in the other language and vice versa. So for example, the celebrated dispersion relation like square root of 1 plus sine square root p over 2 was in a way natural from the discrete nature of the spin chains, but was very difficult to imagine how it could arise from the Rothschild quantum field theory, but it has been shown to arise like from giant magnets of relativistic IQFT with filled levels, for example. There are also some common mathematical like coherent states, classical solutions, which are on both sides. For example, from the Rothschild point of view, on then the S matrices on the spin chain and on the quantum field theory part can also be mapped to each other here in the Zamolchikov-Fadeev algebra framework, for example. So I would like to stay with now from with this point of view. And in this point of view, since we are dealing with a quantum field theory on the Rothschild, which comes from some relativistic system, it's natural to expect to have some kind of crossing symmetry, which is, I mean, natural from this side, but not really, one couldn't really expect it from the spin chain side. So now I would like to describe this side of the problem. Now, so to state the problem, in order to find those things, energies or anomalous dimensions, one has to solve a set of beta equations, algebraic beta and Z equations, which are generically of this type, find the momenta, calculate the energies. Now, as we already described earlier, the string S matrix differs from the asymptotic S matrix of the on-loop gauge theory by some Dessing factor. And the hope is to describe this, to find this formula for this Dessing factor, which would interpolate between the strong coupling result of AFS and Hernandez-Lopez and BDS at weak coupling. So now the question is how to determine, in general, this type of S0 Dessing factor for S matrices. Now, what this problem, of course, appears in ordinary relativistic integrable field theories. So how one does it in that context? So the S matrix is typically a mapping between V1 cross V2 to V2 cross V1, where V1 is the space of asymptotic states. Now, S should be invariant under some symmetry superalgebra of the problem, should satisfy unitarity equation, and should satisfy the Young-Maxwell equation. Now, these requirements are very general consistency conditions. They do not involve any assumptions about relativistic structure, for example. So they are extremely generic. And generically, they determine the S matrix up to an overall scalar factor, so these symmetries. Now, in order to fix this scalar factor, we have to have an additional input, and in the relativistic case, this is the crossing symmetry. So, in order to formulate it, one really has to make certain assumptions on the relativistic structure of the theory, namely, one uses the rapidity parameterization. Namely, one passes from the energy and momenta to rapidities theta, like m cos theta and sin theta. Then Lorentz invariance shows that the S matrix is just a function of the difference of theta 1 and theta 2. And now unitarity becomes just this type of equation. And crossing equation means that if we have a scattering process that we have two particles A and B coming in and C and D going out, we can analytically continue one of the outgoing particles into an incoming antiparticle. And one of the incoming particles, you can analytically continue to an outgoing antiparticle. And the statement is that these S matrix elements should be the same. And when translated in terms of this parameterization, this means that the S matrix should be equal to S of I pi minus theta with some reshuffling of the indices here. So generically, these two equations fix completely the scalar factor up to some CDD factors which just serve to introduce poles, bound, some additional bound states in the problem. So now, one would like to really apply the same kind of philosophy in the case of the ADS5 causes 5 superstring. So the question is it possible to formulate the crossing condition in this case? Now, one here, one encounters very grave difficulties. First of all, the dispersion relation is very much not standard if, and far away from ordinary relativistic case. It's like E equal to square root of 1 plus 8 G squared, which is the Young-Mills coupling constant, times sine squared P over 2. So we not have relativistic invariance. Moreover, even more annoying fact is that the S matrix does not depend on the difference of two rapidities, but really depends individually on each P1 and P2, on the two momenta. So one does not know what would be the counterpart of theta going to theta plus I pi, which appears in the crossing relation of relativistic field theory. So now, in order to overcome these problems, it's useful to look for a completely algebraic reformulation of crossing conditions in order to, in a way, get rid from physical intuition of relativistic theories, because we do not have any kind of intuition about properties of quantum field theories which this kind of dispersion relations. So such an algebraic framework exists, and it's kind of Hopf algebra point of view. Now, what are Hopf algebras? These are just generalizations of ordinary algebras, Lie algebras of symmetries of a field theory, but in such a way that they contain both. It's a unified language which allows us to describe both local and also non-local symmetric charges, and these non-local symmetric charges are really crucial for integrability of quantum field theories. For example, we have Youngians or quantum affine algebras. Now, the fact that non-local charges can be incorporated appears in the fact that there's a coproduct, which is a mapping from A to A cross A, which physically means that we say that how a charge acts on a two-particle state. So, for local charges, it's just independent action. For non-local charges, we have some kind of mixture which depends on both of the two particles at the same time. Now, the nice thing of those Hopf algebras is that they also incorporate an R matrix, which is just the physical S matrix up to a graded permutation operator. So it's naturally incorporated in the framework. And this satisfies the Young-Baxter equation and unitarity. And moreover, what is here the most interesting thing from this point of from our point of view is that there's another ingredient, which is called the antipode, which is intimately linked to its crossing conditions for the case of Youngians or quantum affine algebras. Namely, there's a mapping antihomomorphism of the Hopf algebra, which goes from A to A, anti-homomorphism means that just reverses the order of the product. And now the R matrix, or the physical S matrix, in the Hopf algebra has to satisfy certain additional compatibility conditions with the antipode. Namely, that the antipode cross identity acting on the R matrix should be equal to R to minus 1. As it turns out, which was first done by Bernard Leclerc, Delius, and Basil Leclerc, that these conditions, when applied to Youngians or quantum affine algebras, are exactly the same as crossing conditions in a relativistic quantum field theory. So namely, since one, these equations are equations on the level of algebras, one has to pass to specific representations of those algebras. So then one writes pi of S of A with some charge conjugation matrices and some different representation for the antiparticle. And in fact, this, when one performs this job for Youngians, it's just the crossing conditions in relativistic quantum field theory. So perhaps just to, I will very briefly show that indeed this looks very similar to ordinary crossing conditions. Namely, if we would have the crossing condition written as S of I pi minus theta is equal to S of theta. So now if we reverse theta 1 to minus theta 1, theta 2 to minus theta 2, we get this type of formula. Here we can use unitarity to get that S of theta 1 plus I pi minus theta 2 is equal to inverse of S. So we see that this is very similar to the equation which was here. Namely, we perform some operation on the first particle, act on the S matrix, and we get the inverse of the S matrix. So here this operation is just a shift of the rapidity by I pi, which changes momentum to minus momentum, energy to minus momentum, which is like particle to antiparticle transformation. So this is the physical meaning of the antipode operation. So now we would like to... So now the nice thing about this framework is that here the crossing condition is formulated completely algebraically. So if we have an algebraic kind of description of the R matrix with all the symmetries, we can hope to write crossing symmetry without even knowing anything about relativistic inverse or about something similar. So now we have to write these equations for the S matrix, which is relevant for ADS5 crosses 5 virtual superstring. So we'll just flash one transparency which recalls this construction. So this S matrix has been found by Bicet in last November, which has SU22 cross SU22 symmetry. In fact, one can use an explicit local SU12 cross SU12 language. Here the asymptotic states, so we have to fix the representation of the algebra. So the asymptotic states will be the magnons. For each factor, we have two bosons and two fermions. We have tensor product with two bosons and two fermions, so we have eight bosons and eight fermionic degrees of freedom on the worksheet. Now the rapidities, so we have to fix the representation. Here we have two supercharges, which act on fermions and bosons. So in total we have four parameters, which are a priori arbitrary complex numbers. So we have A, B, C, D, and in fact they are related by some constraints. Well, one of them can be set to 1, it's just normalization. Then SU12 symmetry gives a quadratic constraint, and SU22 at total zero momentum gives a certain complicated quartic constraint for the parameters, where alpha beta are related to the coupling constant to this formula. And moreover, one can find that energy and momentum are really encoded in these group theoretical parameters here, A, B, C, D, or X plus and X minus. So what this means is that the rapidities, in a way here, are not pure numbers, but belong to some algebraic curves. So are parameterized by those numbers satisfying these constraints. And the S matrix was fixed up to the scalar factor in this paper, which satisfies Young-Baxter and unitarity. So now we want to, since this is completely algebraic language, we would like to use this Hopf algebraic framework to implement crossing. So we would like to do impose this type of relation where S is the antipode acting on the matrix in the following way. Now, of course, here we do not really have the full Hopf algebra structure of underlying the this S matrix, so we have to determine it also. But first, let us compare what happens in the relativistic case. In the relativistic case, S roughly acts, apart from charge conjugation, acts on the rapidity parameter by taking it from theta to theta plus I pi. In the representation theory language, this theta is really a parameter which labels the representation of the Youngian, of the underlying Hopf algebra. So here we have a mapping from one representation of the Hopf algebra to another representation of the Hopf algebra with the shift. And the energy and momentum get reversed by this process. In our case, the situation is similar, but all the dynamical properties E and P are encoded in the parameters ABCD, which is subject to those constraints which I showed previously. So the S will be a mapping, a prescription for going from ABCD, which labels the particle, to into A bar, B bar, C bar, D bar, which labels the antiparticle. And since energy and momentum are contained here, this will be part of the dynamical properties of the underlying theory. And in addition, there will be a charge conjugation matrix. So just to show where this charge conjugation matrix appears, I will just show this in transparency. So in fact, first we have to find the action of the antipode, and the defining relation is the following one. So this is the original representation, so ABCD of the original particle. Pi bar is the representation for the antiparticle, and there can be similarity matrices here which have the physical interpretation of charge conjugation matrices. So we now have to take our algebra and substitute here A and find the action of S and C. So now this can be done. So in the first step, we do not know how the antipode acts on the arbitrary non-local charges in our problem. But there are certain charges of the SU1/2 algebra, superalgebra, are realized completely locally. And now for local charges, S, the antipode acts just in a very simple way, S of A is equal to minus A. So in this, so implementing this condition in the equation in the previous transparency, we find that the charge conjugation matrix C is completely fixed. We get A bar and C bar of the antiparticle also. So now we use the condition for the R matrix, S cross 1 times R equal to R minus 1. And for the R matrix, we substitute this unknown scalar factor times the R matrix, which was found by Rissett in the first paper. So when we substitute that here, after some calculation, we find the remaining data concerning the representation for the antiparticle. So this is one information. And also we get a specific equation for S0. So this is the crossing equation, namely that S0 of 1 bar 2 times S0 of 1, 2 is some specific function which I will show on the next transparency. Here this 1 bar means that ABCD has to be substituted by A bar, B bar, C bar, and D bar according to these formulas. But first, before I show this function F, I would like to first say just a few words about the physical interpretation of this of these formulas for the crossing transformation. So here we have found this type of quite complicated formulas, B bar for C bar. In terms of the X plus minus coordinates, these formulas are a bit simpler, namely X bar plus is just alpha beta of X plus, where alpha beta is G squared over 2. And if we now look at the energy momentum expressed in terms of those parameters, we find that indeed P goes to minus P and E goes to minus E, exactly as in the relativistic case. But this was not put in, I mean, from outside, but it came out from the algebraic construction. So now we can, from the previous transparency, we can read off the function f of 1, 2, and it is given It has the simplest form in the x plus minus coordinates, and it looks like this. So the final equations for S0, which we get, is the unitarity equation, S0 of 1, 2 times S0 of 2, 1 is equal to 1, and the crossing equation in the first channel and an analogous equation in the second channel. But in fact, so this would be nice, but unfortunately, it turned out that by looking more closely at this equation, we encounter a very grave problem. Namely, this equation, the crossing equation obtained at this stage appears to be self-contradictory. Because the left-hand side here is explicitly invariant under 1 going to 1 bar. While the right-hand side, one can check that this function is not invariant. So it seems that there's a serious problem. However, one can argue about this problem, that it's a kind of fake, in the sense that this function here looks like a very definite kind of function when expressed in terms of x plus and x minus. But in fact, x plus and x minus are related by a nonlinear constraint. So if you would like to express this function in terms of just a single variable, there will be lots of square root cuts and branch cut structures. So this would be really a multi-valued function. And the same would also hold for S0. So in order to answer if this is a contradiction or not, one would really have to pass from these x plus and x minus variables to some unconstrained single variable, which would be the rapidities. So we have to pass to new variables, which are unconstrained. Now, in fact, this is very similar also to the case which appears for relativistic theories, because the E energy and momentum are, of course, constrained by the mass shell condition, but if one uses the rapidity parameterization, this is really, and thetas are really unconstrained. Now here, the particle-to-antiparticle transformation is an involution, which causes a problem, but in terms of theta, it's no longer an involution. And also from the purely mathematical point of view, for example, for the Youngians, the square of the antipode is not the identity. So it's quite natural to expect that one bar should be different than one. So now we have to pass to these new rapidities. So now if you recall that all the rapidities are really defined by a set of complex numbers, A, B, C, D, which are constrained by certain equations. So now we can set A equal to 1, which was just normalization, eliminate from this equation D, and we get just one non-trivial, non-linear constraint linking B and C. So now if we want to use unconstrained variables mathematically, this means that we have to pass to the universal covering space of this curve. Now to see what it is, we have to calculate the genus. This is the fourth order, the curve of degree 4, so the genus would be 3, but there are two singularities, so the genus is just 1. So this means that the universal covering space is just a complex plane, and this curve is really a torus. So this is an elliptic curve which is hidden behind the structure. So this means that this can be uniformized by elliptic functions. So now this can be done. And in fact, I would just... So B and C can be expressed in terms of X and Y, which lie on an elliptic curve, and the coefficients G2 and G3 are some functions which depend just on the coupling constant of the Young-Mills theorem. Here. The precise form is not important, and from that one can work out what is B and C as a function of Z to Weierstrass functions. So now we can look what... So we have to pass to these new variables, which are just Z, which lie on the complex plane. So all our physical functions which appear in the problem, in this matrix and in the F, become just like B, C, or X plus, X minus of Z, become just elliptic functions on the complex plane, which are periodic with two types of periods. And now we can look what is the crossing transformation when we consider it in these variables. And it turns out that it's extremely simple, because in fact crossing transformation acts by translation by half period of this elliptic curve. So z goes to z plus omega 1. So this is extremely similar to the relativistic case where theta went to theta plus I pi. Here. So now we may write the crossing relation and for the crossing equations for S0 on this complex plane. So these are the final equations for S0. Namely, we have unitarity, S0 of Z1, Z2, Z1, crossing where just one bar is just a shift by omega 1. Here we have two bar, we have to shift by minus omega 1, but this is natural because it's also in the relativistic case, and also from half algebra, we have here S2 minus 1 in the compatibility equation with the antipode. Now, when one does that, we see that the original problem of contradiction disappears, because here, if we do it twice, we get z plus 2 omega 1, and there's no reason to expect it to be related to S of z. But we see that in order for these equations to be consistent, our function f has to satisfy a clear probability that if we shift the first argument by omega 1, then we would have, then the f should be, shifted f should be 1 over f with z2 and z1 interchanged. And one can check that, in fact, the right-hand side satisfies this equation, so it's at least consistent at this level. So now there has been a check at strong coupling of the descent factor. Namely, that if one takes the AFS and Hernandez-Lopez formula for the descent factor and performs an expansion in 1 over square root of lambda, then indeed, to this order, these crossing equations are satisfied. So I will not discuss this later. But now I would like to spend some time to explain more the mathematical structure of this elliptic curve, and also to explain why these crossing equations seems to be very difficult to solve. Because usually in relativistic theories, once one has unitarity and crossing, then the solution is almost automatic. Well, here it's not the case. So first, one could ask, what is the two periods on the elliptic curve? One of them, omega 1, is related to this particle to antiparticle transformation. So what is the interpretation of the second period? So this is related, in fact, if one looks at the fundamental region of the plane, then first of all, the first question would be where the physical line, namely where we have particles of real momenta and positive energies. So this turns out to be the imaginary axis here. The origin is just p equal to zero. Now if we move along the imaginary axis, we momentum increases, which is pi at the half period omega 2, and which is 2 pi at 2 omega 2. So a shift by 2 omega 2 is just the periodicity of the momentum by 2 pi, which is quite natural from this point of view. Now there are certain other special points on the plane. We have some points where the momentum becomes I times infinity, for example, here we might have essential singularities. And also there are some 10 points which seem to be branch points of zeros and poles of F, but I will describe it later. But also it's interesting to see how this curve changes at weak at strong coupling of the gauge theory. So at small lambda, the curve looks like that. So this is the physical line, and it's extremely elongated in the omega 1 direction. So here SBDS is valid here, while the antiparticles are very far away. So this looks like the non-relativistic limit of a relativistic field theory, where theta is small, while I pi is finite. So also this type of structures seems to suggest that at weak coupling it's difficult to test the crossing relation, because if we have some good approximation for S0 close to the physical points, we do not really know anything about S0 for antiparticles at weak coupling. For large coupling, it's opposite, namely the torus is elongated in this direction. So here is the physical line, which is AFS and Hernandez-Lopez, Or here we have the length for antiparticles, and since these are close together, we may indeed expect to, since we know SAFS, it should also look for antiparticles, and indeed it seems it does, because SAFS and Hernandez-Lopez satisfies the crossing equation. Now another interesting problem is when the elliptic curve becomes singular. So this can be checked if we calculate the discriminant. The discriminant in terms of is extremely simple. It's this type of formula where alpha and beta is just g squared over 2. So it degenerates at strictly zero coupling, which is not very interesting, but it also degenerates at a finite negative value of the coupling, which is g squared equal to minus 1/8 or lambda equal to minus pi squared. In fact, it's quite nice because it is exactly the same numerical position as the singularity of the kernel in Lipatov-Stock, which we saw. It was also at g squared equal to minus 1/8 or lambda equal to minus pi squared. So there's some kind of physics appearing and for this negative coupling, which will be interesting to understand. So now I would like to pass to the equations. So we have a set of equations which we have to solve. Now, why it is difficult? Yes? Yeah, well, yes. Okay. Right, so for example, if we would have an ordinary relativistic field theory, we would have unitarity equation and crossing equation, and the way to solve it would be an iterative technique. So first one, we have to solve the first equation. This would not satisfy the second, so the second should be corrected by some factor. This would fail to satisfy the first, so one would have add another factor, and so on, and so on, and so on, and get an infinite product which would solve both of them. Well, here, if one tries to adopt the same kind of iterative technique, one just fails because one does not have get anything convergent. F is periodic, so it starts to repeat itself, so one gets completely nonsense. So this is one problem. Another problem is that, in fact, one can show that one cannot choose some more complicated functions of Z in such a way that F would be just a function of a difference of those functions. So there's no underlying some boost invariant in some more complicated variables. So it's really a non-trivial function of the two momenta. Nevertheless, one can write solutions, but which are not. So the simplest solution is very unphysical. So it was found by us and also Adam and Matthias. So this, of course, solves all the equations, but has a lot of nasty properties. First of all, it has because F has zeros and poles, it has, of course, branch cuts, which appear at all zeros and poles of Z1 and Z2. And moreover, the positions, what is important here is that the position of those branch cuts depend on both rapidities, of both momenta. So in this way, these branch cuts really would be, if they would really exist, they would be really physical properties. However, it's very often the case that if one has this type of naive solutions, then nevertheless, there exists a corresponding solution without branch cuts, which would be meromorphic. So we'll now show a very small toy model where one can write a naive solution of this form and also a meromorphic solution. For example, this type of difference equation has a naive solution with sine of pi z to the power z. But of course, one can also find an exactly meromorphic solution of this equation by just taking the product representation for the sine and then solve each factor of the product individually using gamma functions. So one gets this type of infinite product here, which is meromorphic and solves this equation without any problems. And what one really finds is that the solution has zeros which are just copies of zeros of the original function, but with the order rises in one direction and the order of the poles rises in another direction. So in fact, if we really know what is the structure of zeros and poles of the function which stands in the difference equation, we are in fact done, because we can write a solution which would be monomorphic. So now we have to go back to the function f of z1 and z2, which stands on the right-hand side of the crossing equation, and see what is the structure of zeros and poles. And if one looks at it in some detail, one sees that there's an easy part and a hard part. The easy part involves x plus of z1 minus x plus of z2, while the hard part mixes minus and plus components here. And also there are lots of poles which are associated just with z1 and z2 individually, but they cancel out between the two parts. So in fact, both of these parts seem to be really necessary for f to have nice properties. For example, it turns out that neither the easy part or hard part by themselves, they do not satisfy the consistency condition individually. But one has to take the product to satisfy the consistency conditions between unitarity and crossing. So what are the zeros and poles? It turns out that for fixed Z2, the zero of the easy part is just, this is just a single zero which is known explicitly, and there are two zeros of the hard part, which however are not known explicitly, and they depend in a complicated way on the parameter Z2. So they have this some kind of branch cut structure of the zeros of Z2. And this is the reason why solving this equation is extremely difficult, because if one tries to parameterize the zeros of Z1 in terms of Z2, one will get some branch cut structure. So the easy part can be solved using elliptic gamma functions, but one gets into problems when trying to describe the hard part. So the branch points of those which appear here are just x plus minus equal to plus minus 1, and they generally lead to branch cuts in the solution. And in fact, they appear, for example, with the branch cut of the Hernandez-Lopez expression when it was summed by Artinov Fourth, and because those points appear in the logarithms and logarithms there. So a priori it would not be really bad, because these branch cuts are much more healthy than the branch cut of the original, this naive solution which I mentioned earlier, because they depend only on a single rapidity. So in a way they are purely kinematical. So one could imagine that we could pass from the torus, from the covering space of a torus, to a covering space of punctured torus, where these branch cuts are just taken out, and we will get some more complicated space, but then the S matrix would be completely monomorphic without any kind of ambiguities. So from this point of view, they are not really bad, but unfortunately the solutions which one seems to get using this type of branch cuts do not have good limited strong coupling, so did not reproduce the Hoffman Malvasina limit when p is fixed and lambda goes to infinity. So this is still a problem. Now it turns out that also one can adopt a different strategy, namely construct solutions without branch cuts, but with essential singularities. These type of functions have been considered in papers by Pavel Etinkov, for example, and one can work a bit and construct solution which has essential singularities at zeros and poles of the hard part, but which is nice elliptic gamma monomorphic function for the easy part. So a priori also it looks quite attractive, because it turns out that what we really want is we want to have nice behavior for physical momenta. And it turns out that only the easy part has zeros in the line of physical momentum. So the hard part lies somewhere outside. But unfortunately, the singularities of the hard part approach the point of zero momentum. And since the essential singularities approach this point, these solutions oscillate widely. So they have to be just thrown away, unfortunately. In fact, there has been a general argument by Juan Maldacena, a kind of Noga argument, that either one has branch cuts or essential singularities. Of course, branch cuts this argument works for the original torus if we do not take out any points from it. So since essential singularity seems to be completely unphysical, it seems that one should allow for some branch cuts, which could be interpreted as enlarging the space of generalized repetitives. So these branch cuts should have to end at points which depend only on a single on the rapidity of each individual variable and not on some not on the difference of Z1 and Z2, for example. So the problem is still open, I mean, to find a solution which works. So now I'll just go to the conclusions. So for multiple crossing conditions for the ADS5 cross S5 logic as a matrix, the basics point was to use a kind of Hopf algebraic reformulation of crossing in order to bypass the use for any kind of physical intuition from relativistic theories. But of course, one would really want to have a good physical intuition for quantum field theories, which is dispersion relation of the square root type, because we would like to have this physical intuition to say something about the admissible branch cuts or analytical structure. So this part is still missing, and it's one of the outstanding open problems still. Then we found it I showed that one has to introduce general repetitive plane as a universal covering space of the S-matrix parameters, and you formulate crossing there. But possibly, because of those branch cuts, one would have to pass from the torus to some higher covering space where one allows some essential singularities or branch cuts at some specific points. So the most interesting, of course, problem is to understand really the analytical structure. Also, to understand how bound states interact with this problem. So all the bound states which were found at the Nigdal and collaborators or Hoffman and Baldassarre, the BPS and the non-BPS bound state, they should have some signature on the SZO. So it would be really very interesting to understand how they interplay with the above analytical structure. Also, on the purely mathematical side, it would be very interesting to really find the Hopf algebra structure of these non-local charges which appear here. Because it seems that the S-matrix of Niklas is giving a completely different and completely new solution of the Young-Baxter equation, which is not encompassed certainly by a Youngian kind of symmetry. So there's lots of, I guess, mathematical questions which would arise if one could really define this Hopf algebra completely, ask about representations, and something like that. For example, to understand from a purely mathematical point of view the meaning of this kind of quartic constraint, which was in fact essential for the construction to go through. So thank you.
Okay, so thanks very much for this talk.
Yes. Yes.
But as I understand it, for uniformization of the dispersion relation removes, you know, all of the singularities associated with the square root of the dispersion relation.
Right.
So what would it mean if there was an additional singularity of a function of quantum momentum? Uh-huh. Do you have a physical interpretation? Because it doesn't seem like anything would happen special.
Uh-huh.
You know, sign it for the dispersion relation.
Uh-huh. Okay. So for example, for the points which where the branch cuts appear in those solutions, I do not have any kind of intuition about if they are physical or not. But there are also some special points on the torus where the momentum is strictly infinite. It's I times infinity. So I would expect, for example, that at those points, one could allow for branch cuts structure. And in fact, even in relativistic scattering theories, at infinite theta, this is really an essential singularity. So I guess that forcing ourselves for the S0 to be neuromorphic at this point is too much. But this is one example. The problem is that I don't know how those x plus equal to plus minus 1, can are they physical or not? I don't know.
Do you think that the symmetry you explore in the crossing relations means that there is a Lorentz invariance on the Walt sheet somewhere in this theory, and it's just lost because you are working in some gauge. Because your relations, of course, all the time remind the relativistical invariant relations, like mm-hmm. crossing.
I guess that one cannot have a formulation, I mean, in this language, with the gauge fixing, which would have boosts, for example. Because it seems that F cannot be written as a difference of some quantities. So there's no hope for some kind of boost. But this does not mean that there could be a different quantization scheme with really a relativistic quantum field theory throughout. I mean, like going more covariant and not conformal gauge and not light cone gauge. Well, yeah, it would be really very interesting to see if there's any remnant of the boost here. But I guess that if they would appear, it would be very fast, very non-trivial kind of action. But because there should be, intuitively, there should be some kind of remnant of that, but I don't know.
Can I ask a more naive question? As far as I understood, the main problem is solving this functional equation for this S0 function. Are you sure that a solution exists?
No.
And if it is, if it exists, is it unique, or what are the expectations?
Well, of course, if one has a solution, then there will be the CDD factors, yes.
It's not unique.
Yes.
If it exists.
Yes. But for the same reason as for the the relativistic case.
Yeah. Okay.
So then one would have to look at the bound state structure and, using this information, to pinpoint, I mean, what kind of additional structure would be. Now, as for existence, well, there are examples which are, for example, essential singularities, mm-hmm. but one can forget about them. Then there are really examples like Niklas and also another construction of a solution which is not on the torus but which on some universal covering space where the points were +1 and -1 has been removed. So there one can even find a one-parameter family of solutions for that case. But everything depends on really the existence problem has to be supplemented by analytical conditions which one should impose on that.
There's one more. Okay, there's one. Kolya?
There's another model with similar problem. It's statistical mechanics. It's the Kyle Voss one. Is there any relation between these two?
Yeah, it's very interesting because there also it's a model where the rapidities really lie on some algebraic curve. And I think there's no, one cannot say that, one cannot map this model to a Kyle Voss model because there at genus 1, I think it's the easing model and then everything depends on the difference. The problem where it does not depend on the difference is for n greater than 2, starting with 3, and then the curve is of high genus. But indeed, I guess it's of a similar family of models. So also, it would be really fascinating to understand this type of problems from using that methods. Methods associated to the Kyle Voss model. So,
So I guess in all the cases where there's non-trivial dressing factors are known, there is some kind of non-trivial vacuum structure. I mean, the examples are anti-ferromagnetic vacuum in spin chains or in relativistic field theory, so you have a half-filled sea of antiparticles, and then you get this non-trivial dressing factor. Do you have any idea where this sort of non-trivial, I mean, so this would indicate that on the gauge side, the BPS vacuum has to be a non-trivial half-filled vacuum somehow. Do you somehow see that, where this could come from? Because we certainly, from these spin chains, it looks like the reference state is just trivial. The BPS vacuum looks very trivial.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm not sure if, because for the O-N model, this is a kind of non-trivial dressing factor which is obtained by crossing an entirety there. So,
but it's a relativistic theory, so yes, it comes from filling.
Okay, so
see what Kostya has been doing, and if he drains the Dirac C, then there's no dressing factor.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know. Here, anyway, the problem is that this. The problem with this approach is, of course, that one starts just with all the symmetries, and one doesn't have a really insight into Lagrangian properties.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense on the string side, but the problem is that on the gauge side, there's no indication for a non-trivial vacuum, and these dressing factors are always associated to non-trivial vacuum structure. So why do you hope that...
No, but for example...
Why do you hope that you have crossing on the gauge side? No.
But even in the case of the completely empty Fermi C, right? I guess that crossing conditions should hold, because it's really not a question of a state, right? It's a question of the asymmetrics of the theory, right? Well, no, because the mu breaks Lorentz invariance in that case. Yeah, so of course it got broken down.
I see no more questions. Now, Matthias, would you like to comment on your...
Everything is written. Just
everybody can read. Okay.
So,
this concludes the morning session.